Good morning, everybody. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. On November 23rd is the Monday of Thanksgiving week. And I want to wish you all, before I forget, a happy Thanksgiving. And I know it's going to be probably smaller for everybody this year, but I still hope you have a good time. And be optimistic, because you just remember this, you could be the turkey. Okay, so have a good time, all right? Enjoy whatever family's around you, et cetera, et cetera. We're going to do that here in Maine, all right? Very rainy day here in Maine, just pouring like crazy. We'll find out if it's pouring out in Washington, which is where we're going to go with this show. We're going to go over to West Valley School District in near Yakima, Washington, talk to Dr. Peter Finch, our good friend who's an assistant superintendent over there, and he has brought with him two very special people. That's Minerva Pardo, who's their family engagement coordinator, award-winning, all right, family engagement coordinator, along with Don Bender, award-winning Don Bender. I think Don also won the award, okay? And Don is the Migrant Family Engagement and Student Leadership Coordinator at the ESA, the Educational Service District, number 105 in Yakima. This is great, because I love it when school districts work with their ESA. It's just super. We're going to talk about culturally responsive instructional strategies, which they, Minerva and Don, really put together, and my friend Peter wanted to really highlight them, and we're going to do that on this show, which we are going to archive over at ace-ed.org. That's this home website of our American Consortium for Equity in Education, and today's a big deal, because we have our November-December issue of Equity and Access magazine, our official online journal, up on site. So please go over there and enjoy it. All right, it's at ace-ed.org. See what we're doing. Put in your voice for equity. Join with us, please. It's free. You'll see an icon over there to join our consortium. We'd love you to do it, so we can keep you motivated about equity. Find out what you're doing about equity. Next year is going to be a super big year for the consortium. We want you involved. Everything at ace-ed.org, including all these podcasts that we do. And I'm looking forward to seeing you go over there. We do tweet these out over at EduTalk Radio, and also at Access to Equity, ED. That's the number two, Access to Equity, ED. All right, and on LinkedIn, it's under my name, Larry Jacobs. And on Facebook, it's under my name, Larry Jacobs, as well as Education Talk Radio. So please, all these things to remember, join with us, ace-ed.org. Okay, and all that's over there. Peter, are you there?
Oh, yes, I'm here, Larry. It's so good to join you today.
It's a pleasure to have you here, my friend, Dr. Peter Finch. First of all, Yakima, Washington. I'm here in Maine. It has been pouring for 12 hours. What's going on out there in rainy land?
Yeah, well, usually we're on the dry side of the Cascades, but it is raining here as well, so maybe it's raining coast to coast.
There you go. Okay, so it's a wet day in Washington, as well as here in Maine, across the country. Okay, Minerva, are you there?
I am here. How are you?
Call me Larry, please, Minerva. It's an honor and a privilege, and welcome to our show.
Thank you, Larry.
And you are the first Estrella Award winner I've ever had here. Okay, congratulations. That is a big deal. It's the Central Washington State Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. They gave you a wonderful award. We're going to talk about this. And Don, welcome to you as well.
Larry, if I could jump in there. I always say that Minerva is our all-star, and it's official. She got the Estrella, the star award, from the Central Washington Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. So she's officially an all-star.
She's up as a star and in the pantheon of heaven. There you go. Okay, congratulations.
Thank
Hello,
you.
Don Bender. Don, are you there?
Hello.
Don?
Thanks for the opportunity to be with you.
Oh, it's my pleasure, and I love you're an educational service agency, and I work with your national group, the AESA, all the time here on Education Talk Radio and in the magazine. They're wonderful friends of ours, okay, and I love what educational service agencies do. You are Educational Service District 105 in Yakima, right?
Correct.
Yeah, good man. I love this, and I love having you on here with the school district, because that, to me, that's so important that the ESAs and the school districts work together. Don is in his 40th year of education. Obviously, he started when he was 12, right? Are you talking about when you started school, like in kindergarten? Is that what you're talking about, your 40th year? Don's in his 40th year of professional education, okay, for migrant bilingual education, okay. And he's in his 10th year with the Education Service Agency, and this one services Central Washington. I'm reading here from Ellensburg, Washington, to the Oregon border, okay, but this is the key. In 2016, Don and Minerva received permission from the Washington State Office of the Superintendent of Public Instruction to redesign, this is so good, the Migrant Education Summer School Program for Peter's West Valley School District, Minerva's West Valley School District, okay? Instead of bringing the kids to school, they brought learning activities to the kids. Remember, we're talking about the migrant education. It's a hard thing to do. They did this through a home visitor program. The program was a huge success and has been replicated by other school districts in Washington State. So let me just throw out there, congratulations to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Peter, you're going to have to nominate these two for our Champions of Equity Award. Will you do that at some point?
I know. I need to. In our district, we always talk about the importance of initiative and innovation. And Minerva and Donald working together, they exemplify doing something different to get better results.
Yep. There's power in synergy there. I got to tell you, it's just wonderful. And this is, by the way, this issue that's up there now is our Champions of Equity issue. Okay, I please ace-ed.org and Minerva and Don, please. I'm going to say this again, and Peter, you can be part of this. If you guys would like to write up the article, we'll talk about this, but I'd love to have an article on this because we don't do enough about migrant education. So we'd love to have an article in a forthcoming issue of the magazine. And then Peter has even more reason to nominate you to be Champions of Equity. Does that work out, do you think, gang?
It sounds like a plan.
It is a plan. Okay. Thank you, Peter. Okay. Yeah, Peter, Minerva?
Yes.
Peter is your boss. He just said it's a plan, so now you're going to have a homework assignment with Don to write an article.
Yeah, I will go and remind him, hey.
And by the way, Don, who doesn't work for the district, can say no, but then you have to make him crazy till he says yes. Okay? So, got it? Okay, it's good stuff.
Well, Donald's really a great partner, so he'll step up.
I know. Hey, I'm sure.
Hey, Larry, yeah. I got to tell you, Donald, you can't see him on the radio. He's very youthful looking. That 40 years, I couldn't believe it when I read that myself. But then I did hear a couple weeks ago he became a grandfather, an abuelo, times two. I think he's got two new grandbabies.
Two?
Yeah,
twins?
Well, that's times
Don,
now.
Don, twins? Wait a minute. Twins or what? Don.
Well, no, actually, just born really close together. They'll be cousins.
Ah, that's great. Congratulations.
Hard to visit him in the times of COVID, but
that is,
we'll get
it's there. Terrible. But thank God we have the technology of Zoom. You can see them, and they can meet you that way. Okay, at least for a while. It's stuck. It stinks right now. Are they both in Washington?
Yes. Actually, fairly close.
Okay, well, that's good news, okay, because I can't tell you, and you have friends, too, who have new grandchildren, and they live here in New England, and the kids are in Texas or California or Missouri, okay? So you're really lucky. You will see them soon. Congratulations, man. That's great. Boys, girls, we may as well give them a little shout-out. Boys, girls, Donald.
Girls and one boy. Well, there's three girls and one boy all together so far.
And how about the new ones? How about the new ones?
Girls, two girls. Uh-huh.
Yoo-hoo!
Wow. And there we have gender equity speaking out, ladies and gentlemen, in the form of Minerva Pardo. That's great. Okay. So let's just start at the beginning here. I'll ask Minerva. Minerva, you got this together. How did you do this? Just give us the basics of the program and how it germinated in your mind to do it this way, to go to their homes, which I think is great because migrants, you know, it's hard to get them to engage with the school district. Talk about all this. Minerva, you start. Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay, so this is exciting, and I feel happy that I get to start because when I just started working here in West Valley, Donald Bender was really, really supportive and giving me a lot of ideas. I cannot say enough about Peter Finch, to be honest. He has always been my mentor. But Donald Bender said to me, you know something, Minerva? We can he has these creativity. He's always having great ideas. And he said, Minerva, how about we do these? And I am always crazy for new ideas, and so we put it together, and we thought about going on home visits. And I got to tell you, Larry, that was my first challenge. I was not really comfortable thinking about home visits.
Let me ask you a question on that. Did you watch 60 Minutes by any chance last night?
Oh, no, I was reading.
Well, that's okay. The reason I'm asking, and it just brought it up when you said that, they had a woman who's the social worker for the school district in Tampa, Florida, in Hillsborough County.
I saw that part. Yes.
Yeah, and she had to track down 7,000 kids who didn't show up for school this year. And
yes.
The point I'm making is that I was watching her, and I was so impressed. She wasn't shy. She just went about and did it. She went out and made these home visits on places she wasn't even sure what was going on. One place she had to take a sheriff's officer with her, okay, just to make sure and be on the safe side and all that. So it's not so easy to make home visits. So I congratulate you for doing it. I think you were right to be a little apprehensive. How did it work out at the end?
Well, so it was Donald who said, Minerva, are you a little afraid of going on home visit? And I was like, to be honest, I am. And he said, don't worry about it. I can go with you. And so we went to that first home, and it was just beautiful to see families so welcoming. And it was during the summer, right? So, hey, you want some water? Hey, we have some apples. Hey, and they were so happy. And,
they're appreciative.
You know, appreciative, big time.
Yeah.
And so it was new. And I bet you that if we think about that lady, that social worker you're talking about, Florida, probably the first couple of times she was not feeling that comfortable until right now, if you ask me now, the first thing I say is let's build connection by going on a home visit. That's my first response now.
Wow, good for you. That's a wonderful way to do it. And you said an interesting word. Don, we're talking about migrant kids. Am I correct?
Yes, and migrant means most often farm workers, and
mm-hmm.
they migrate, follow the crops. So they have
mm-hmm.
interrupted school years. There's gaps in their education then, and it comes with challenges, but also some resources and richness. Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely, it does, without question. And Minerva used we're all using an interesting word. We're saying home visit. But when we say home, they're not stationary. They're migratory, okay? Mm-hmm. And when a typical home, what are we talking about for the folks who and the kids? These folks are moving from place to place following the crops. What's a home like?
Are you asking
when
me?
When you use the word – no, I'm asking Don, as a matter of fact. But if he wants to, he can speak to you. Don, go ahead. I'm sorry. Don.
Sure. Well, they also typically are of low financial resources and are often at a basic survival mode. And financially, they make their money for the whole year during harvest time. And typically it might be $17,000 to $20,000is their annual income. And mm-hmm. so it's what you'd expect. It's often what they can afford. And sometimes it's in a garage or sometimes kind of rambled little situations. But
mm-hmm.
Often it's with extended family. There'll be a lot of the grandparents and uncles and stuff. But I think we tend to sometimes look at deficits and we don't look at the strengths. And so there's also mm-hmm. tremendous strength and unity and values and wisdom in the community and in the homes. And that they have overcome often some tremendous barriers. So there's resilience.
Absolutely.
And hard work.
Brutally hard work. Brutally hard work. I wouldn't want to do it. And the reason I'm asking the question, because, you know, these people have to make a living, and they're very heroic, and they want their kids to be educated, and believe me, there isn't one of them that doesn't want to be educated, and there wasn't one of them that doesn't want their child to do better than they are doing. That's just typical of any given set of parents, okay? But these are these people are migrants. They're migrant laborers, all right? And if you didn't make the home visit, and I go back to Minerva here, what would have happened to those kids over the summer? What you did was really important, okay? You're reaching out like that. Well, talk about that, because it must be hard for them to deal with the school districts. Minerva.
Yes, I think that's a very interesting question, because one of the main reasons why I love connecting with our Hispanic families is because there's a challenge with understanding the system. Those parents, when we understand migrant, we're not just talking about Hispanic or people that come from other countries such as Mexico, right? But most of them are from Mexico, especially here in this area, agriculture.
Okay.
Most of them are in orchards. And so when they grew up in a different educational system, the first challenge is they do not understand what is going on. I'm going to tell you one thing. For example, I remember one time when I was having a conversation with a parent, and I was like, okay, your student is missing school so many times, you know, and that's not okay. And she laughed, and she said, well, this girl sometimes doesn't want to get up. And then I explained, well, in this country, things are different. And once I explained, she opened her eyes wide open, and she was like, oh, I didn't know. So one of the beautiful things about building connections with migrant families is that you can educate them about what it's expected from them as parents and what it's expected from their children. So reading, it's a very interesting topic to talk about. So our parents don't have time to read. Even if they love reading, sometimes they don't have time to read. They get up at 4 in the morning, and they finish their journey at 5, sometimes 6 o'clock, you know. So they just go home, take a shower, talk a little bit with their children, and go to bed. So getting this habit of reading, that is another challenge. So we have a few challenges that come with culture, but like Donald was saying, it's really important we look at things from a strength-based perspective. They have those challenges. They have a lot of care for their children.
Absolutely.
And they do
Absolutely.
Want their children to do better than they did.
They
so that's
sure
why
do.
They're here.
Yeah, they sure do. And you are I assume you're Latina, am I correct, Minerva?
Yes, I am from Mexico City.
No, the big city. Where they,
yeah, just a few just a few million
the,
people
yeah,
living
just,
in that
just
city.
Just a few billion people. It's huge. Okay.
Minerva
okay.
has two bachelor's degrees from Mexico DF and her master's from Mexico City.
Wow. Minerva, you're something else, okay? It doesn't surprise me, to be perfectly honest, okay? But, you know, when you go into this, and this is key, and just talk about this, if I may dwell on this for a minute, okay? Culturally responsive. Okay. Now you go in there. You are a person of Latina descent. Okay. You go in there. That must be very, very helpful. Okay. Talk about, and you just did a little bit. Okay. They come from a different school system. What else scares them? Okay. That you're able to overcome. Okay.
First thing is.
Yeah.
Sorry, Larry. I was just going to say the first thing I can bring in is the language, right? So once I go there, I don't speak a formal Spanish or, you know, I just speak colloquial Spanish with them and they feel comfortable, right? And but I think that doesn't really just pertain to those that speak Spanish as a first language. We can look for things, try to learn a little more about the culture of that family we're going to go on a home visit and then try to build that connection. We have families from Guatemala. I don't know much about Guatemala culture, and I have to learn. And then I have that connection. Once I know one piece of their culture, I can build that connection with them. And that's the key. One of the key elements when we're talking about cultural responsive instructional strategies is understanding culture, building the connection through culture.
Absolutely. And let me ask you this, and Peter, you might be the one to answer this one. Peter, and actually, you just said it beautifully, Minerva. Okay, we say that word Latina, Latino, but there's a lot of countries involved here. Okay, everybody's different. A Guatemalan person is different from a Mexican person, if I may. All right. And, Peter, how does that translate into the school system? You know, Minerva and Don are doing a great job. Okay, but how's that work of being culturally responsive translating to the teachers over at West Valley?
Well, I'm really proud of our staff in West Valley that they understand the importance of cultural competence. And that means understanding the families that we serve. And so for the past 2 years, during the first week of school in West Valley, we actually have half days for students and then half days for family engagement. And we don't call it parent-teacher conference. We call it family engagement. Parent-teacher has this implication that the teacher is doing a lot of the talking, they're giving their syllabus and such and expectations. That's not family engagement week. Family Engagement Week is a time for teachers to listen. Listen to the parents. Listen to the child. What are their interests? What's their cultural background? Learn about the child, what their strengths and needs are, and then they can build instruction to personalize learning for every student.
And what percentage of kids are we talking about in West Valley as the example?
In West Valley, we're about 45%, 40 to 45% Hispanic. And then 60 to 65% white and about 5% other. So Hispanic is our primary minority population.
Right. And what about the migrant folks? What percentage are they?
In West Valley, it's a pretty small percent, about 5% migrant education. In the Yakima Valley, there's a very large percent. And quite frankly, in Washington State, it's one of the largest migrant education.
Oh, yeah. I would be surprised. That's what I was asking.
There's Texas, California, and Washington State.
Yeah, wow. That's pretty amazing. Don, in the ESD's area from Ellensburg to the Oregon border, is there a lot of migrants? Because obviously you're migrant family engagement coordinator. Obviously they created a title. There must have been a reason. Don?
Yes. In fact, Washington State is the second largest behind California. We're even larger than Texas.
Wow.
And the majority of those live in central Washington. There is one other ESD kind of in the north part of central Washington, but there's 30,000 migrant students in Washington State, and that's very – it fluctuates quite a bit, you know, because when harvest comes around, it's much, much bigger. And so it really is almost to the point that anybody in central Washington who's an educator will have migrant students in their classes or in their programs.
Is it easier to teach these kids now that we're – well, I don't know about the status of COVID out there, okay, but everybody's got Zoom and technology and however you want to call that, remote learning and all that sort of thing. Is it easier to work with the migrant kids now than it was prior? Because no matter where they are, now they don't have an excuse. They can, you know, Zoom right in, always to West Valley or wherever, whatever district. I'll ask Don this question.
Well,
Don, is it easier these days? What's going on?
Oh, it's just a huge challenge. There hopefully is a silver lining, and maybe the things that we learn with the continuous or virtual learning will translate into future ways to close the gaps. But right now, it's put so many of us just in a survival mode, and I'm just afraid we're going to be losing a lot of our kids as it is. Between 50 and 60% of the migrant students leave school without a diploma.
Right.
And now, it's I don't know, it's kind of scary.
It's scary for everybody. Like I was saying, there were 7,000 kids missing out at just Hillsboro down in Florida. Okay,
right.
This year. So we can imagine.
Larry?
Yes, go ahead, Pete.
If I could, I'd share a good success story that we had last spring. You know, West Valley, the students have a Chromebook, and they even get a mobile hotspot for cellular Wi-Fi if needed. And we learned very quickly that's necessary but not sufficient for kids to actually log in to their online work. And based on the success of the home visiting we've had with our early learning program and with the summer migrant education program, we had a school that used some discretionary funds to have a home visitor for school-aged children prior to COVID. And that school was really was amazing in their engagement, and that home visitor, Jacinia Larios, she's a national trainer for the Strengthening Families Framework along with Minerva, and her work was just amazing. They went from the, in March when they had the first closure for COVID, there was about 50% of our students who are English language learners were logging into their online programs. And by May, Jacinia had them at 100% logging in. So we really learned that family engagement and the home visitors are key.
And you just said something interesting to me. Again, I don't know that much about migrant education, but there must be a huge, you just mentioned it, ESL factor, English as a second language, kids learning English, okay? But I'm curious, and maybe Minerva's the one to answer this. What generation are we talking? Are most of the people who are migrant laborers, if I may, okay, and migrant pickers, are they first-generation people, or were their parents coming to the U.S. before them as well? In other words, has there been movement in learning English over the course of all the time? That's what I'm
that
really asking,
That is an interesting
Minerva.
Question. Yeah, I think that's an interesting question. From my experience, I would say yes. Most of them are first generation. But here in West Valley, we're also working with English classes for parents. And let me share with you that now, post-COVID, right, during COVID, now all or most of families log into weekly Zoom meetings with me. And we have English classes for them on Monday and Tuesday. And we're doing this through Zoom. We have two groups. So if we think
that's
that technology is a challenge, let's just think of a way that we can teach them how to use Zoom, and well, it's been successful.
Go ahead, Peter. Go.
Oh, just another win with our technology is that we've partnered with the Waterford.org and provided the Upstart program for our migrant education preschoolers.
Wonderful.
And so that was really exciting to see. The last spring, the preschoolers were still logging in and getting their foundational skills, and we've tracked that, and a real success. I'm thinking of one kiddo that goes to White Hollow Elementary. He's just thriving right now, and the principal says that he's just one of their all-stars right now. So it's very exciting to see the successes.
And thank you for bringing up my good friends over at Waterford. I was just talking to Ben Houston, the president of the company, last week. What a great company, and talk about getting stuff done in terms of equity, okay? They really are. You know this, Peter. We were all on the AASA symposium together. I mean, they're really just a great, great people. Sorry. So this started in the summer of 2016. I'm going to ask Don this because Don, it started with West Valley. Where are we now?
Well, since we started with West Valley, there's been at least four other school districts that have implemented the summer school model of home visiting. You know, there's always a lot of home visiting that maybe is kind of deficit focused. There's some issue or some problem or something that is not a good connect. But this model is built on the funds of knowledge, the strengths of the parents and the community.
So nice.
And so that's a whole different additive kind of mindset, and it's not viewing the problem so much as coming in as partners with things to learn from each other. Minerva said it so well. We go in as educators and learn from the parents as they learn from us.
Yeah, that's right.
So those aspects of this home visiting program are unique then to this model that four and probably five districts have now really institutionalized aspects of it.
And Larry, maybe we could have Donald share, when we talk about culturally responsive instructional strategies, it's really fun to hear the actual learning activities that Donald and Minerva had designed for this project. It's really, really fun to hear.
Go ahead. Don, you want to start that and swing it over to Minerva, whatever. Go ahead. Thank you, Peter.
I grew up 100% white middle class with privilege and entered my teaching career with really a little understanding of diversity and those challenges. But then 35 years ago, I married into the migrant lifestyle, and my wife, family, and her friends taught me the joy and challenges of migrant farm working community. So she gifted me.
I get the feeling you really are an abuelo. I thought we were just using that to be politically correct. You really are an abuelo. There you go.
Gifted me. Now I can say I am bicultural and have the
best. I should say you are.
Her language and her culture. But I remember what fun it was to do simple things like play with tops, spinning tops. That's a pretty big thing throughout a lot of Latin America that children growing up will play with. And the parents then remember how they used to play with tops. And so that was, to me, like something out of the circus. It was amazing the things they can do with these spinning tops. She taught me how to play loteria, kind of a bingo game, and that taught me a lot of Spanish. It taught me idioms and proverbs. And she and her family and her friends taught me how to play dominoes in ways that were
great. Dominoes
really
is great.
Intuitive math skills, but in such a fun and loving way, in a family setting. So then I was able to recognize opportunities to take these activities and integrate them into the classroom or into the curriculum. And I realized, you know, when they're playing dominoes, they're using the Origo addition fluency strategies, which we try to intentionally teach in a classroom setting, but they've just naturally mastered those skills. And as somebody who is played dominoes quite a bit, is a master at addition and multiplication. They have a number sense. So how do we create the funds of knowledge? How do we now use that background and that skill, tweak it just a little bit so that when we go on these home visitings, we're saying, let's play dominoes. And they know how to play dominoes, a lot of them, or they know how to play loteria. So they're all ready now at ease and motivated. And we're finally valuing the activities that they grew up with rather than questioning or setting aside.
I love that. I love
that. And so with the loteria games, they learn how to a lot of science, biology terms, because there's pictures on the cards of living organisms that can be classified.
Mm. Well,
or there's pictures of technology that can be described, or astronomy. So just by giving them a little support and like some cards to play with that are a little more academic, we've now built onto their strengths. And this is a cultural responsive strategy.
Yeah, it is.
Number one, a cultural responsive strategy improves their success in school, raises their achievement levels.
Well, of course, if you recognize the culture and make people feel at home, they become part of an environment of learning. It's the most obvious. It's so obvious it almost goes without saying. Okay.
Yes.
Yet we don't do it.
Exactly. Yeah, that environment
yet
of learning.
We do not do it. We
and
do
finally,
many people. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I like what Minerva always says. Do we expect our families to fit in to the way we do things, or do we want them to have a sense of belonging? We want a sense of belonging.
Absolutely, we do. I mean, and we forget. I mean, we know. Again, I'm saying obvious stuff. The Latin culture, if I may use that term, okay, whatever country we're dealing with brings their own culture, and things we can learn that you were just saying from those cultures make things better for us. It's that simple. Okay,
yes.
So it's really just a win-win. You reminded me with that. You know, with the tops, when you said the tops, for some reason, I remember that book I read years ago called The Kite Runner, and it's about an Afghani child. And the Afghans use kites all the time. That's a big thing in Afghanistan. Okay, they play with kites and talk about aerodynamics and all that. Okay, and cooperative and all that kind of thing. And it's the same thing with the dominoes. Once we start to understand these cultures, okay, we can take advantage of that, make these kids feel at home, make these kids learn. It's that simple. Don, I want to ask you something. This was really turning the corner. It was a big success. It's going to other districts. Okay, you would say it was a success, right, prior to COVID, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. And now with COVID, and believe me, there's going to be more changes down the pike. How are we doing? I'm going to ask Don this, and I'm going to ask Minerva the same thing. Okay. Don, how are we doing with the COVID and what you're trying to do?
I am optimistic, but I recognize it's tragic right now. But because of this, it's forced us into creating, being creative. And when this is over, we have distance learning versions now of these funds of knowledge activities. And all of a sudden, that opens up the possibility that we can play Loteria with anybody, our grandparents in Mexico, if we want to.
There you go.
Or with any, and we can have experts. We can have authors. We can. It doesn't matter geographically where they're at. There's no travel now involved. And so there's a lot of potential for some really just super kinds of funds of knowledge activities that can be
there.
Yeah,
we have to see the opportunity in this. It really is. And Loteria, is that what you're saying, Loteria?
Yeah.
Loteria, bingo. Even, I was going to say, bingo. You got it exactly right. Bingo, okay? That's perfect, okay? It's bingo, what a great idea. Minerva, what are your thoughts well, this is now just in this age of COVID. How successful are we? Where are we going to go with this? Just put it in perspective for right now and the future.
Having worked on family engagement for now 5 years, I can tell you one thing. There's better engagement now with Zoom than before.
Yeah.
And that is, I would have a family night and say, oh, my goodness, I had five parents joining this session. Fabulous. Now, if I have five, that means that nobody joined. I have an average of 10 to 15 parents joining every Thursday for a meeting.
So
we just have to reinvent our strategy. I am having, for example, I'm going to share with you a premiere, something new that I'm going to be doing starting in January. Every month, I'm going to have one person in the community that has a successful story to share.
Oh.
And that's going to be via Zoom. So we have, I have the first three ladies already online. And so they're going to talk about their stories as migrants. When they came here, they didn't speak the language. And so they're going to share where they are now and all the journey and have just families listen. And I'm going to tell you one thing. When you see those Zoom meetings, you can see families either making dinner, folding clothes, or, you know, so they are there listening. It's like this in a radio show. They're listening, and we can probably have better engagement and bring more information to them. And once they feel they belong to a system, they will be definitely more responsive.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we got to make them part of the system, and we have to appreciate them as part of the system. You really got this together. Peter, what a great show. Thank you for bringing this group together, my friend.
Oh, yeah. We have such a great team, such great
you
people
do.
To work with, and always having that
district.
Initiative and innovation. Like with the TOPS, you know, you think, well, how do you make TOPS into math? But they had activities where they're timing how long the TOP goes, and then graphing,
absolutely.
You know, doing a table of the different times that they did the TOP, and then graphing the TOP, turn it all into data analysis, and it's just amazing the work that this team has done, and you can see why it's been replicated by other school districts.
Right, and I just have to say on that, you know, TOPS, the toy TOPS, has been around since probably the beginning of mankind. Some prehistoric guy probably made a rock spin. Okay.
And you know something, Larry? I'm going to tell you, add something right there to those spinning TOPS. Parents used to play with those spinning TOPS, right?
Yeah.
So then what you see is that when Don was teaching those children how to play with the TOP, then Dad would jump in and say, hey, I know how to do that. So you see what beautiful thing was happening right there? We were having the parent engage in that playful learning experience.
That's right.
And
it is a learning experience because there's got to be something to it in the simple fact that it's been around probably since prehistory, okay? Mm-hmm. And sometimes we lose – one culture keeps it, another culture loses it, and we got to bring it back together.
Right.
We have to go, my friends in Washington. Stay dry today, okay? Eat apples. There's plenty of apples out there. Okay, and have a good – well, I'll eat lobster. You eat apples. How's that sound? Is that all right? No. You eat salmon, I'll eat lobster. We'll make it more marine oriented. Okay, Peter, thanks a million. And Minerva and Don, keep up the good work, guys. Stay safe, please. Okay.
Thank you, Larry.
Thanks so much,
thank
Larry.
You.
Really appreciate the
thank
opportunity
you.
To share.
Believe me, my pleasure. Thank you all. Have a good Thanksgiving. Bye bye.
You too. Bye bye.
Bye. Okay, and happy Thanksgiving to everybody in case I don't see you again, though we will have two shows each day this week, Tuesday and Wednesday. Please go over to ace-ed.org. Minerva, Don, go over there and do that and to sign up for our Consortium for Equity. 2021 is going to be a big year. Have a safe Thanksgiving. Enjoy our magazine. That was West Valley School District. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thank you for listening.